is Hard Parking, sponsored by Right Honda and Right Toyota out of Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm your host, Jay Finnick, recording from my home studio in Gilbert, Arizona. Coming up on today's show, I had a conversation with Mitchell Bailey. Mitchell Bailey is co-founder of Trust Me Vodka. You may have heard me talk about that before in the past. It's definitely come up on One Drink Wednesday that I do with Wes Tankersley every Wednesday. And Mitchell has actually been our guest before a couple years ago, and then he recently joined us last week. A lot of stuff has happened at the company, and he is telling all. He's also a fellow creative. He's been working with professional athletes for decades now, working on motocross designs, all sorts of apparel. Has a podcast, Chasing the Cool Podcast, and you can also go to chasingthecool.com to see what he's been up to. He's kind of living that dream of things that I'm trying to do. You guys know I have a t-shirt company. Well, I don't have a t-shirt company, but I make shirts for clients, but I don't really advertise. But maybe I should. Also, a little update on the wheels issue I talked about last week. I almost have all four wheels. So what happened was I reached out. They couldn't find a solution. No one could help me find a solution. So I started poking around on this Baiyi app, and I found there was another shipping option. They have five or six shipping options, but all of them were pretty much grayed out, except for the one that wanted to charge $350 to $420 a wheel and tire each. And then I found another one that was, I don't know, $130, $140 bucks a piece each. Now, granted, remember last week I talked about possibly just cutting my losses, losing my $380 that I paid for these wheels because I didn't want to deal with being $1,900 in on something that I've already got wheels and tires on my car right now. But for $500, I can get them all over here and we can see about it. So I went ahead and paid that, and within 2 days, they were here. Sort of. I received an email from FedEx, and at first I thought it was a fake email because it just had some person's name, tracking, like a little, I don't know, order number or something. It looked fake as hell. But I clicked on it anyway, and sure as shit, it was a FedEx agent that needed me to call them and classify these wheels. Because the fact that there was wheels and tires that belong in a car, it was a customs declaration form for transportation. It's like, what's the VIN of the vehicle, the make, the model? I'm like, what? So I called her, got some clarification. She says, no, you have to fill out this HS7 form. And she goes, I'm not telling you what you have to do, but what most people do is they fill out this box. And remember, I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just telling you what people do. Wink, wink type of deal. I'm like, all right, cool, bet. I'm going to go ahead and do this. And they were looking at the amount. It said $12,000. It said I paid $12,000, like $500 for this stuff. And I go, whoa, 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 whoa. Lady, I pay like, with shipping, like $900, if that. And so we started looking at the document. And what happened was people in Japan, they filled it out in Japanese money, right? And so it really came out to like $87. And she goes, oh, well, it's less than $100, so I don't know. They do something with importing. If it's less than X amount, they go ahead and release it to you. So I send her this form. And throughout the course of the day, I got, within an hour, somebody else emailed me, then another person emailed me, then another person emailed me. I go, look, guys, I appreciate what you're doing here, but I've already talked to Janie, is her name. I've already talked to Janie. I've submitted the form. She's got it taken care of. Thank you, guys. I'm good. Stop bothering me. So then that next day, the next morning, I wake up and I have four text messages from FedEx. Each of these wheels has its own tracking number because it's four packages, right? They're all in Oakland. I'm like, wow, I just paid for this shit 2 days ago. And now they're in Oakland. How's that for shipping from Japan? Wheels and tires. We're not talking weeks. We're not talking months. We're talking days. So one tire shows up at my house. I'm like, that's weird. I got one. I look at the tracking numbers. There's shipping exceptions. The other one is here in Phoenix, but it's just chilling. And then two of them are still in Oakland, and they're having customs issues. It's like, okay. Play phone tag back and forth, talk to FedEx, and they go, no, no. You have to fill out one item, one form for each item. I go, yeah, but even if they're wheels and tires, so technically they're the same item, one of four, two of four, three of four, four of four. It's not like I got a pocket watch, a wheel, and a bottle of gin, three different items, which would each require their own form because they're all distinctly different. So the guy goes, no, no, you have to fill out one per. So that I go back and look at the original email with me talking shit to all those guys that kept emailing me consistently, like every hour, and I looked, and the number they're referencing was different. It was for each package. So I called, not Janie, a guy named Diego. Diego. I called that guy and said, hey, man. I sent him an email first with the attachment. I go, hey, could you please apply this to this tracking number and this tracking number? My mistake. The other day, I didn't realize you had to have one per item. And so he emails me back. I actually end up giving a call, like just a follow-up. And he goes, no, you don't really have to have one per item. The one you did should be good enough for all four. I don't know why they told you you have to have one per item because they're all basically the same item. I go, yeah, that's what I'm saying, right? So then the next day, I get the second one. And then 2 days later, I get the third one. But the fourth one is still sitting in Oakland as of April 14th in red because they say if you don't get it sorted out by the 15th, they're going to ship it back to Japan. And so in my garage, I have three BBS wheels and tires wrapped in bubble with little Japanese words all over the bubble wrap. The fourth one is stranded in Oakland. Diego assured me that they're not going to send it back. It's going to be fine. But he also assured me that he reached out and talked to the right person that would apply my form to that last tracking number. But the status hasn't changed. So hopefully, Monday or Tuesday, so April 15th or 16th, that status is going to change and it's going to be in my garage. This conversation coming up is brought to you by The Cell Shop, Arizona's number one wireless service. I'm not reading this. Cell Shop, they're authorized AT&T dealer. Check them out, cellshop.us. After this word from 4Wheel Online, Mitchell Bailey. For over a decade, 4Wheel Online has been bringing the best truck accessories and truck parts to enhance the appearance and performance of all trucks and SUVs. They are dedicated to providing an extensive range of upgrades that will match any maker model on the road. The truck products cover everything to give your truck a custom look and added functionality. Need a wheel and tire package? Head over and use the configuration tool. They carry all the major brands of wheels and tires, so go get outfitted today. Visit them online at 4Wheel Online. Joined by Mitchell Bailey, you know, he was on One Drink Wednesday with myself and Wes Tankersley a couple times now. Fellow creative, a lot more successful at doing that than I am. And so, you know, maybe I can learn a few things today. But Mitchell Bailey, M. Bailey, Chasing the Cool, you know, welcome to Hard Parking.
Thanks for having me, man. It's fun. Always good getting on and chatting with you.
So let's talk about some of your creative stuff that you have. The big thing is, you know, we'll just jump right to that and kind of get that out of the way, or let's talk about that.
Chasing the Cool, to kind of circle back to that, and then we'll come to where that's at today, is Chasing the Cool is kind of my design marketing firm and the name that I've used for many years. Always been a designer since kind of like 1995 is kind of when I started getting into drawing and working with apparel brands inside the action sports industry. And as that just grew and grew, and I got to a point that I needed to be more of a brand than just my own name. So actually along the way, weirdly, a friend of mine gave me some heels from a boutique and wanted me to paint them, and they were going to sell them in the boutique. I had no clue even to process what they were thinking I was going to do on those. I'm like, dude, that's not what I do. He dropped off shoes and just, come on, man, just do it. Draw on them. It'll be cool. They're going to put them in there and just see what happens. So one night, sitting around with my wife, and I just started messing around drawing. I'm like, that's kind of fun. I put some little like monster characters and stuff, and they sold these things for like $450. You know, I'm sitting there going like, wait, you gave me $50. Like, wait, time out. So then they dropped off more pairs. So I did a couple more. And then I was like, wait a minute, why don't I just do this for myself? It turned into needing a name. And I started using the name Chasing the Cool for all my design stuff. And then I kept put OCD on the bottom of the shoes because there was these magazine articles in like Inked magazine, where basically they would allow you to come in and like these girls would just be like, they'd have the feet up and you'd see the heel and the artwork on the bottom and on the sides. So I put this little OCD with a lightning bolt, which stood for obsessive cool disorder, which you can see. So typically in the back of my podcast and stuff, I've got some old remnants of things I made for that. So over the years, I was constantly working within, you know, I come from background in action sports and motorsports, kind of got into kind of fashion brands, and then got connected with actual players within the NFL, PGA, MLB, NBA, and started to like work with players designing their brands. So everybody wants that next, you know, Jordan brand and logo, things like that. So I would work to create kind of merch lines for individual players, and just really got just the diversity was awesome on what I was able to do. Over the years, through many people I met, I ended up getting back into someone that came from the action sports industry. His name was Mark Simo, and he came from the background of No Fear, Spy Sunglasses. And basically, I just, you know, I'd been around again doing stuff within brands he was working with. So he knew of me and knew my family through motocross. We connected there, and long story short, I came up with this brand. He's like, hey, let's do something. He's the business guy. So I was like, hey, you know, that's, as a creative, it's, you know, sometimes your business sense and financials and things like that aren't your best strengths. And you kind of don't have the best successes in business because you're such just in the creative mindset all the time and thinking a little bit differently. So I was like, hey, here's a guy who's proven his work in the past. This would be something different to partner up with something like this and kind of go out of my comfort zone and go into, came up with vodka. And so I came up with the name Trust Me. So Trust Me Vodka was born. And from that point, the whole concept behind that was basically, you know, for the brands that are most popular now are brands like Tito's and Grey Goose and Absolute. So you're familiar with the, you know, what those bottles look like, what the logos look like, what the marketing is. And it's the same thing for 30, 40, 50 years as far as what that bottle and everything looks like. And basically then they're just dumping millions of dollars into, you know, Super Bowl commercials and campaigns with Ciroc being P. Diddy, et cetera. So, the concept for me was like, hey, what if we put art on the bottles, being an artist and constantly creating t-shirts and different things, that what if the bottle's always evolving and changing and we put art on the back? So then what I did is reached out to a close friend of mine, Derek Swinford, and he was really connected in the art world and was great friends with Shepard Fairey, for those that are familiar with his art. One of the biggest guerrilla marketing, you know, urban art artists in the world. So he was great friends with him. We weren't able to do anything with him in the beginning. He had a non-compete with a competing alcohol brand. So we went to Jeff Soto, who is also very well known. They grew up together, Shepard Fairey and Jeff Soto, massive following. So he was the first one to do art on the bottle. And from there, it spawned on to every time we would do a batch of vodka out of Idaho, the vodka would be 20,000 bottles at a time. And the artwork on 20,000 bottles, once that was sold out, it would be done forever. We'd move on to a new artist. So at that point, I started pulling different artists. My next one was a good friend of mine, James Haunt. And then we went into Tara McPherson and Kai Koopman and these artists that have this really pop surrealism, urban art, really different style of art as well that really draws you in. It's just different than what you would see. Even when you know an art collector and you go into their house, it's typically, this is not the style of art that you're used to. So when people see it, it's really intriguing. And when you pull that, you're able to pull that bottle off the shelf and really look at it and the magnification of it with the liquid and everything, it's really cool. And then it became a collector's item. So over time, as we continue to do that, we're selling out, we're bringing in shareholders and raising money that way. And it was fun, you know, it was great. And over time, through raising money and kind of some challenges that we've dealt with within the company, it got kind of tricky in the last towards the, you know, last half of the year. And coming into this year, we started losing some employees and kind of the business as far as the growth of what we were doing and the structure of how it was being run and looking for distributorship and looking for different things that we could bring in. It was tough to, you know, kind of move forward with me and what my involvement was and being able to move forward based on how things were working internally. So I have a, you know, without getting too deep into it, because it would take up the whole show here, but definitely I just released, I just did a Chasing the Cool podcast, which I do with my friend, Ryan Kernion. That episode just went up. Like I said, it's an hour and a half episode because it's really a two-part show that we decided just to combine all into one, just because there's so many shareholders and so many people that have been asking me about this for the last 6 to 9 months. Cause I kind of went a little bit dark based on things that were going on, some legal things that were going on, some new people that were getting involved to come kind of help and try and uplift the company and kind of get us over that hump where we needed to be, because it really is, has done great and has a lot of opportunity. We just kind of hit that plateau of where you know, kind of, I feel someone needs to come in and kind of help get it to that next level. And we can continue to do that. I still have hopes that we can do that. But today it's, for me, I'm not involved on it at this level today, just based on some internal things that are going on, but hoping for the best with that. But yeah, for anybody that really wants to dive in and really get the full backstory of the brand, how it was created, what the concept was, and then exactly where it stands today, which is kind of the second half of that show. It's definitely worth a watch it. Chasing the Cool, the podcast, which is, we're on Instagram, YouTube, Spotify. So there's multiple ways to find that.
Yeah, I listened to that episode and I thought it was fantastic in explaining some of those things. You know, I own a few, a couple dozen shares, so I'm not as invested as other people, but I'm invested in you as a person, as a creative. You know, you bring a lot of high energy. Let's take a step back there, because you kind of breezed past this. And so if I picked up on this, everybody else did too. You went from, you know, making these cool designs on the bottom of shoes and selling them for $400, which is quite a bit, especially given back in that time. You started doing that in 95. I'm class of 94, which probably makes you a couple years older or right around the same age in high school. But then you started getting involved into sports athletes. And then that's the part, I think, that I'm like, wait a minute, you blew past that. Like, how did you, what had to happen?
I want to talk about Trust Me Vodka first. So I figured we'd get that.
Yeah.
Jump into some other stuff. So.
And that was good too, because you're right. I mean, if they really want to know what's going on with that, you know, it's actually a delicious product and the artwork on there is really good. And I have some follow-ups for that as well, but go to listen to your podcast, subscribe to your podcast, you know, Chasing the Cool, and you're going to get a lot of information on there and good information too. But yeah, let's go to the athletes. How did you get involved in that? What had to have happened?
So my background and my family, my brother and my dad were world motocross champions, motocross, supercross. So that I was born and raised into that, and actually grew up in Virginia, on the East Coast. That's why I've talked about, you know, I'm a Bulls fan.
Right. Things
like that. So my background with, you know, play some basketball with Coach K at Duke, and watching, actually, we're talking about age and timing ourselves. I got to watch Michael Jordan play at UNC before he went to the Chicago Bulls. So my history and connection to him is even a little deeper than just being a sneakerhead. But through that and through the connections with my brother, when I actually graduated school and moved out to Southern California, that was when I first kind of went over to No Fear, which at the time was Marty Motes. Rest in peace. He was an ex motocross racer that knew the family. And he basically gave me a chance to just come in and start. Back then I was drawing the t-shirts. This was before I even knew what a Macintosh was or any clue about Illustrator or anything like that. So, he was paying me to draw some stuff for athletes for No Fear, for the people that they sponsored, and that kind of picked up. And then other companies started to see that within action sports industry mostly. So then the kind of just grew, and then I got my first Mac and started all self-taught on Illustrator and Photoshop and things like that. So, you know, over time that's fun, because you look back at I think as an artist, you can look back at art like every 3 to 5 years and just kind of like, oh my God, like how embarrassing is that? Cause you improve so much just by doing it, you know, year after year. But, as in getting into that, so the more that I would do, I would just get, you know, opportunity and opportunity and opportunity as I got better and creating, you know, business decks. Jeremy McGrath is the king of Supercross. He won.
I know that name. Yeah.
Wins. So, through the industry, through again, the being able to have a family, David Bailey and Gary Bailey is my dad. But through the opportunity to get in with them and have that to kind of open some doors, I definitely take that. Yeah, it's something I could have done maybe without them, but it's, you know, definitely helps when you have a couple doors open for you.
Of course.
You relationship. So. With Jeremy McGrath, it was things like that where all of a sudden I'm designing business decks for Jeremy McGrath to go get that next level money, which ended up becoming Bud Light, was a huge sponsor and was very unique for the sport of Supercross because of the fact, you know, it was typically just your Honda, Kawasaki, Yamaha, very, very smaller thinking, small industry. But the success of him and who he was being a, you know, the vibrant character and the flash and style he had. It was like, man, I was doing decks for, you know, Hard Rock Cafe and, you know, Verizon and everything you can think of, Nike, Jordan, you name it. I did the same for James Stewart, you know. So James Stewart did a bunch of stuff where I was doing things for Jordan to pitch, things like that. So that's where the opportunity came, was through that you start to meet, you're getting into different industries and you start to meet, you know, it's Ricky Fowler and then it's Ryan Matthews with the Chargers. And so the relationships just start to build. And the next thing you know, I'm playing golf with Clay Thompson. And so just through those things, you open the doors, it's networking. And it's really what made, you know, sticking with the Trust Me Vodka concept, that's what made this also work, is the people that we brought in, people like yourself, people like Wes, and to where it is, you get people from all over the country and you don't know your backgrounds of your podcast or athletes, you know, or celebrities, you know, or bar owners, you know. All those things are the networking that we all have. And depending on our backgrounds, that's what can help drive your success in the future. You know?
Decks. You keep mentioning these decks, and that's a very art term, production term, marketing term. What are decks?
Yes.
Tell my people what decks are.
A deck is like a presentation that would, if, you know, if we're sticking with Jeremy McGrath as a supercross racer, he typically has an agent that is going to, basically, I'm going to sit with, and we're going to put together a presentation for Jeremy McGrath saying how amazing he is and how many millions of dollars you should give him to either cover his semi truck that they drive all the bikes to every week or around the world, or sponsor him with his clothing and his gear, et cetera. So you create these visuals in this deck that usually I'm going to work with someone to take, you know, an agent that's going to take numbers and all the things to break down what the sport of supercross and the visibility looks like and all that. And then I'm going to take the visuals to create the look of, here's what you would look like Verizon Wireless if you sponsor Jeremy McGrath. This is what it's going to look like. So my computer over the years since 95 is like that. That's what I would enjoy someday, is to make a book that I could put out that shows the visuals, not only of the things that I've done, that even when I look back sometimes to create bios and look at things, it's like, oh man, this is awesome. I forgot about this. This is cool. And just kind of figuring out how to even narrow it down to show someone, because I have so many things, but the amount of things that I have that no one's ever seen, because a Jeremy McGrath deck, for example, or James Stewart or something with, I can tell people because it doesn't matter at this point, but like Ricky Fowler, I did a deck for the Jordan brand and Red Bull for Ricky Fowler. And it's something that no one ever saw outside of Ricky Fowler's group and Jordan and Red Bull. So things like that are like, man, like I'd love everybody to be able to see it, especially right now we get the Masters going on. I'd love to post it, show how cool these visuals of what could have been type of thing are. But I have so much of that stuff that you create, but that's ultimately what it is. It's kind of a package that you send off to larger companies to get sponsorship for whatever it is.
It's like a visual sales pitch. So when you're talking about it, I'm imagining the movie Air, right?
Yes.
Where they bring him in there and they'll like sit him in the conference room and this is what you could do and this is what it's going to look like and imagine this, imagine that. That's pretty cool, man.
Those visuals exactly are the big thing that someone like, you know, Michael Jordan, for example, is going to sit there and mom might be looking at numbers and breakdowns of figures and how they're going to launch things. And Michael Jordan's just sitting there looking at the drawing of the shoe going, this is all I give a crap about. Does it look cool or not? So I'm kind of on one side of that. And then over the years with something like Trust Me Vodka and future things that I work on, it's basically me kind of having an understanding as more of a business person over the years to kind of be able to build that whole thing by myself and understanding how those look from the business side, money you want to raise, what depending on where you're at, what your demographics look like and all your opportunities, and then really seal the deal with that, the beautiful visuals that you just want to sit there and really be able, you think that everyone has that ability to envision something if you tell them about it, kind of just tell them a good story that people can really
picture. Don't.
And the majority of people actually don't, which is crazy. Even to Mark Simo, Trust Me Vodka, he has the ability to have ideas and think of things, but to where I would sit there and like, okay, cool, let's do it. And it's like, well, no, now you need to go create this whole visual so I can really understand what we just talked about. Cause I can't really see it, where I'm like, I already see it, I'm done. I just want to move on because I've already got it in my head. But a lot of people aren't like that. So those types of things are super helpful to create stuff.
Did I hear it correctly? Were the early bottles didn't have artwork on them as far as from artists, maybe your artwork?
No, they did have, they had art. The
day one
artist was Jeff Soda. That was the one I was explaining. He was the very first artist we had. The way that worked too, I mean, that's where you could kind of see the success of the brand was Jeff Soto, our first artist, probably took a year to a year and a half to really move through that first line of product. And for me, I knew the story of what we were going to be telling, which was multiple artists that over time, as you started, you know, having them in your bar, collecting them on your wall, it would look really cool to have this brand with all these different looking bottles of awesome art on the background. And But in the beginning, it was just Jeff Soto. So people thought he created these owls in the background. That was the art that he created. And It was basically, the concept was owls overlooking the, we have a potato vodka and a wheat. So it was these owls at night that would kind of look over the potato and the wheat fields as protectors. And so you had this cool story behind it. But again, typically brands come out, and once you see that bottle, that's the bottle for the rest of the life of the brand. So the difference was, I'm sitting there going, man, I've already got 3-4 artists ready to go, but we still got 15,000 bottles sitting in the back that we gotta move before we launch the new artist. Cause that was really the thing, was creating this demand, like sneakerheads. You know, I always compare it to Nike. It's the easiest thing for people to relate to, is when you create this sense of demand and this like sense to like, you have to have this, and you can only have it between this timeline. So when we would have one and know that, and we would tell our shareholders and tell the market, hey, we're about to release a new artist next week. And then we'd launch it. We'd tell a full story. People would buy them up immediately and go through, and then it'd be ready. Like, okay, but we have to wait till the next one. Well, I don't know what the next one is. No, then we need to sell the rest of this product so you can see the next artist, you know? So over time, what I was going to say is that first like year and a half for Jeff Soto then became like 6 months, and then it became 3 months. Would sell out, and it became a month. Then we started to overlap and have two artists at a time, and even got to a point where we'd introduce three artists at a time, because the product was moving so quick that we needed more than 20,000 bottles in the market at a time.
How did you find the artists? You know, you probably had a couple off of Soto. Was it just, I mean, was there a process, or was it, okay, these are the five guys or gals we're looking at, and let's see if they're interested, and let's go from there? Or what was that process?
That was where it started, was my buddy Derek Swinford, that had the relationship with Jeff Soto. So he made that first introduction, and kind of like, yeah, I can walk the guy in here and sit down, and let's hank a deal and get it going. So that's where we started, through just his popularity and visibility. And again, still through Derek. James Haunt was a friend of mine from previous brands that I had worked with. So that was easy for me to know that he was going to be part of this, and he ended up doing actually multiple designs for us. And then on from that, it became Tara McPherson and Kaya Koopman were also connections through Derek Swinford, but people that look up to Jeff Soto, vice versa. So that first kind of group of, you know, 4 or 5 artists, once I was able to, for me, just be a fan of art and all the people that I follow, I could reach out to them on Instagram, unbeknownst, having no idea who I am, no idea who Trust Me Vodka is. But once they looked up the story of, okay, this is a great product and it looks really cool, oh my God, you have Jeff Soto and Tara McPherson and James Haunt and Kai Koopman, it was like, I'm in. And we weren't paying these artists a lot of money. It was really just kind of like a unique opportunity for them. They got paid, but it was a unique opportunity for them to do something different and have a unique canvas that they've never worked on before. In a different way to kind of promote it. But after that, it became much easier to get artists because of exactly that. Just again, using the, you know, Nike or any company, once you get 1, 2, 3 people, and it's like, well, if they're on the team, I want to be on the team, you know, like obviously. Sure. So it's kind of that concept of how we started to get them after that.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, as an artist, especially if you're, I wouldn't say up and coming, because you could be up and coming, but maybe you're known in certain circles, that'd be kind of a cool thing to have on your resume. It's like, look, here's my art on these bottles as well. One of the things that you had said in your podcast that I took note of was about the strategy of the packaging. You know, you had to pick the right bottle, and you'd ask your co-host, who's a bartender. I think he's a bartender. He's a lot to do with bars.
Yes, Ryan,
You know, what's the first thing you reach for, and why do you reach for it? And then, of course, you know, I drink pretty much everything, as we've talked about on One Drink Wednesday. But you do notice the cool bottles, but you don't always necessarily pull the trigger on them.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things you also said is you can get the bottles in tons of stores, but then what? Because I don't know if you saw the documentary on Flamin' Hot Cheetos, but one of the issues they had was, it's great. One of the issues that they had is it tasted great. They had it on the shelves. No one bought it. It was just there. So what they ended up doing was giving a bunch of it away. And then all of a sudden, and they change the packaging, and now it's their number one, you know, selling thing, period, in the brand. Whereas before, they couldn't even move it. You know, talk about that challenge of getting it. You know, you went to the investment rounds for people like me, but, you know, I don't think people realize that challenge of how hard it is to break into that industry and stay relevant.
Yeah, I mean, that's any industry, really. I mean, we can talk about clothing, anything like that. I mean, everything's so kind of flooded and oversaturated. It's so hard to be completely unique with a brand new product that no one's ever seen before or touched. So it's how you package it. It's that name that pulls you in. It's there's something that has to give you that ability to go, hey, I'm used to this over here, but I'm going to give this a try just because something caught my eye about it. So for me, it was obviously starting square one was the Trust Me Vodka name. So the Trust Me name running vertically on the bottle as opposed to horizontal, what 90% of the brands out there are, obviously gives you, you know, you go from this much area to this much area immediately. And when you're typically sitting behind a bar, you're shopping in a store, you're backed up to where, you know, when something's got to jump out at you. Then the artwork and the color. So the color of the capsule cork on the top of the bottle as well would kind of match up with the art. So we had multiple colors with that as well that would match with it. So be it a, you know, kind of a bright yellow or a pink or a purple, things like that kind of really gave the vibrancy to get it to jump off. When you're sitting in bars and stuff, you get kind of lighting like behind me where you've got, you know, LEDs and shelves that kind of light the bottles up and stuff. So all those things gave the ability to like really like make this thing pop off. Crazy, but that was always the concept is in this space, especially being called on by name is the biggest challenge. Because like you said, yeah, you'll drink anything, but typically when you're going out to drink and if you're a vodka person, whatever it is, you're going to walk in and you're either going right to the store knowing exactly what bottle you're grabbing because you're just in and out and you don't have time to shop around. So you're grabbing your Tito's or your Grey Goose. And same thing, you go to a bar, you go up, hey, what do you want? Hey, give me a Jack and Coke. You know, you're calling on it by name. You don't even know what they have. You're not looking behind the shelf. You just need, just give me my drink, Jack and Coke, you know? So that's the hardest part is your marketing isn't where people are necessarily going in and going shopping before they place an order. And like, oh, I like this shirt. This is different. So people are going in already knowing typically exactly what they're going to have before they ever even get there. So it's that marketing over all those years, however you did it, to land to that place where someone is going to be sitting at a bar somewhere. And when the waitress rocks up, they go, oh, but Trust Me Vodka, soda, cranberry, whatever. Like that takes years to do that. So that was also a big point of bringing in these shareholders, small investment, large amount of shareholders, was so that we didn't have to come out with millions of dollars and throw it into marketing and commercials and things that next thing you know, you're 2 years in and you've spent $10 million and you really have nothing to show for it because you just wasted it all on marketing and no, cool, everybody's still drinking Tito's. I did nothing. So we created this like the biggest sales marketing team in the world in a sense with nearly 20,000 people that invested into the country, into the company with as little as $120, some people. And through that, those people have the biggest voices really because they want to go out and tell everybody about this vodka company that they're a part of because it's cool and it's fun. And what better place to sit and be social than at a bar or around the fire pit with people and you start having cocktails and you talk a little more and you want to talk about the vodka and oh, let me go get it and I'll try it and I'll share it with you. So that whole concept of everything is what really made this successful was the large group of people along with a great product. I mean, obviously we had to start with that, the name, the bottle, to your point with my buddy, I worked with him before we ever created that to understand the difference of, you know, how big around it is and kind of the square edges a little bit and the weight on the bottom and the embossing of the logo and all the things that give you that, hey, I at least want to, can I at least look at that? Can I at least pick that up? Like if you can't get to that point, then you're never going to want to open it up and try what's inside to know that there's a really good product inside. Doesn't matter. So that's the biggest challenge for me is like, that's the only part that I know that I'm good at. I know I can get you to want to pick it up off the shelf, look at it, talk about it, and not just order a Tito's or a Grey Goose. So then after that part, it's like, well, we'll figure the rest out once we get there. But to start, I know that I'm good enough at doing that I can create you to go, hey, I want to try this. This looks good. So the bottle and everything is a big point because we talked about it on the podcast that, you know, something like Crystal Skull, the vodka that that Dan Aykroyd did is in this skull bottle that's really cool, but you've never seen it on the shelf at any bar ever because it just doesn't fit. It's obviously never going to go in a well or anything like that where they're grabbing it and just going because it doesn't. It's a very unique kind of put over to the side and really just a visual to look at, which, okay, can be cool. And maybe that was the point of what he did it for. Who knows? But we really wanted something that's just like, man, this, the name, the bottle, the weight, everything about it is just, you want to grab it and pour it. And over time, hopefully calling it by name.
You know, that Crystal Skull Vodka is a good example of something where your guys' shapes of your bottles are, they make sense on the shelf. And because shelf real, you know, real estate matters too. And so you have this head up there. But then the other part of it is, in the similarities of both is people want them, they want to drink them, but they want to be able to collect them too. The yes. artist series, you know, becomes even more collectible, going back to your point of desirability. But it seems like it'd be hard as a bartender, a bar staff, a bar manager to empty that skull and know that maybe nobody wants it, but now it's going in the trash, you know? Yes. So it's kind of that. No,
there's, and you want that. I mean, right there, that shows that you're doing something right. If a bartender, especially anyone, but a bartender, especially that deals with this crap all day long, could care less, is like, I'm going to stash that to the side for me. I'll take that home later. Or, you know, like that. You want people to keep it. That became the gift and the curse in the beginning as well. As mm-hmm. like you say, you know, we've always known that when you start something, you give away a lot of product. That's kind of what kicks it off and what happens. So the point of that is obviously, hey, share it, spread the word, tell more people about it. So in giving it away, what would happen is as soon as you're like, hey, like, oh my God, I'm putting this on the shelf. I'm never opening this. You're like, no, that's app, then give it back. How about this? Open it and try it and then go buy one. Once you see how good it is. Cause the whole point is we want you to not be drinking what you're drinking so you can see how good this is. Cause that we talked about that. That's the biggest thing that we had was I would never sell the vodka because the vodka, I knew how good the vodka was. And it's one of the best vodkas ever had. And the after effect because of how it's made is in a sense, you can't claim this, but I would say it's hangover free based on other ones I've had. And the effects of what he had with this because of how it's made. But if you never get to that point, you never try it, then you're not going to know. And vodka is the hardest one because it's considered tasteless and odorless, which I disagree with both of those highly. But
me too.
Just our two vodkas, our gluten-free potato and the organic wheat, you could tell the difference. And if you just taste it alone, you'll say, big difference from Tito's, big difference from Sky. These different vodkas and then drop down the shelf to pop off, et cetera. They're race fuel that you want to just like, absolutely not. But what happens is a college kid or people, you go out and yeah, you just say vodka soda.
Vodka cranberry, vodka soda. Yeah. Or Tito's.
A lot of times,
to your point.
So that became the new norm is instead of using the word vodka, you would use the word Tito's, exactly the point, to call on your drink by name. So that's how much the marketing does work, but I've lost track of what it is. But I mean, Tito's been around for 27 years or something like that, you know? So it was this overnight success 8 years ago.
Sort of, right. But, yeah, exactly.
But it's not, you know? So rarely overnight successes really aren't overnight successes. It's when something happens that the rest of the world maybe almost recognizes overnight, but that's a great point because it's exactly that. You typically go up vodka, which means it's especially if it's busy, they're just reaching into the well and grabbing whatever, you know, $1 vodka that's sitting down there, popping it in and have 2, 3, 4 of those. Let me know how you feel tomorrow, you know, but with this, you can really get in depending. And with age, we realize those things. We realize the difference between everything that we drink and put in our body from fast food to what, the type of alcohol, et cetera, that there's a little bit of you get what you pay for and understanding the quality of good versus bad and why. Well, look at this. I'm just paying for what's back here. This guy's paying $12 a drink. What an idiot. I'm like, well, cool. Let me know how your day is tomorrow. You know, so it's one of those too that you just live and learn.
Yeah. And people who follow me know that I love alcohol. I love to drink. Vodka is one of my spirits of choice. I have cases of empty, trust me, vodkas in the closet right next to me. And I drink it. I love the art. I love to support the brand. But to your point, it doesn't make me feel bad the next day because I have a lot of allergic reactions to a lot of the things I drink. And some vodka does that to me and some don't. And Trust Me Vodka was the first brand that I found that I could drink without. And it's weird because, you know, you get tipsy or whatnot and you feel differently depending on what you're drinking. But when I drink that, I'm like, wow, this is what it's supposed to feel like, you know, instead of my body like flipping out on everything else that I drink. So that's a testament to that. I want to go back again to, let's go back to high school. You know, as a young athlete and an artist, you know, at what point did you decide you know, sometimes people just, you know what you're going to be as an athlete pretty early in life, but, you know, when did you realize it had to have been before the shoes, right? You know, when did you realize that this was really something you wanted to do? And what was Mitchell Bailey doing in school?
Shoes, right? It's got to be
the shoes.
Well, actually, it actually didn't become that till I was kind of doing it, you know? So,
okay.
So to go back to like the high school days and the background of my family and my brother being at the top of the sport, he was, you know, the company at the time that he rode for was called JT Racing. They were like the Nike of motocross. So he was sponsored by that company and got to a point that the final couple of years that he rode, you know, he was kind of going in and picking out like, hey, I want that color, you know? So he was almost going in like Michael Jordan and kind of like helping design his gear and the look and the helmet paint job and all that. So he had his own unique look with this Dayglo orange gear, and some you could really see, one of the most famous Supercross races of all time. You can see it on YouTube. It was 1986 Anaheim Supercross. He was wearing this gear, you know, at that. So like after that, like that's what he wore every race, because like Ricky Fowler wearing orange, it became part of how you identified who he was, you know? So through all that, and through his like having a unique style, and my dad was similar back in the day, you know, he had every little sticker had to be perfect. So obviously I caught up on all that and got a lot from, you know, everything that they taught me, and really being into stuff like that. And then living in Virginia, my brother was racing, so he was in out in California, so he'd come back and forth, but he would always bring back the cool stuff from California, you know, 4 to 8 years before we saw it on the East Coast. I mean, back
then,
it was much slower to have even something like a Life's a Beach, No Fear land back on the East Coast. And my brother would just either ship it back or come back with it. And like, oh my God, I'd be going to school like the coolest kid on the planet because I had all this stuff. So all that was kind of built into me before I even really understood what it was. So the last year of high school for my senior project, I basically came out to California. My brother had moved out here full-time at that point, and sat here and stayed here for a week and actually painted a helmet. You'd see I have a lot of helmets in the background here. I actually designed and painted a helmet that I took back and told the story. Like that was my senior project that I did for that. And then ended up moving out to California. Then my brother, a friend of mine, Alex Paul, AP Designs, he's responsible. He's like the main guy for Monster Energy that paints everything, be it across the board for all action sports, NASCAR, everything. He's a painter, so I kind of connected with him, my brother. So we kind of started designing and learning about painting and designing back to the, you know, No Fear, Marty Motes, got connected there. So as I just started doing it, because I didn't know what else I was going to do, I raced motocross forever. I came out here, I started doing test riding for like Honda, Transworld Magazine, things like that. So I was still riding, but through my brother was injured, you know, and it was in a wheelchair in 1987. And so it was always in the back of your head. And at any point in a sport like that or anything that you're doing, if you have any fear, I loved it. I still did it for a long time. But once I had kids, and just as you get a little bit older, it just gets to a point where I'm like, you know what would be cool is not going to the hospital and playing golf today instead, if I'm going to go, you know, so right. I developed into that, but the design background came from that. I was just kind of doing it. And once you're in, and then the more opportunities you get, and then you learn more, and then you get feedback, and then it's exciting and it's more fun, and then you get another opportunity. And so it kind of just happened by accident. By no means did I leave school or anything with the intent. I mean, I wish I would have, because had I known about it back then, I would have gone to school for art. You know, I would have studied art. I would have done all this. I didn't do any of that stuff. So everything was, you know, just from the streets and learning from people and just being around good people. So blessed to have those opportunities, but it was all just self-taught. And that's how I just kept doing it. And then get a buddy that wanted to go graffiti a wall or something. No idea how to do that, but let's do it. So everything I did is just self-taught. And that's where we're at. That's why when you look back here, it's just a wall of shit everywhere.
A wall of art, man. Yeah, I tried the art school thing, art college, and what I realized before I failed out of art college was it didn't really teach me how to do anything. It just taught me how to do what I did much better.
Right.
You know. Yeah. Yeah. More skilled, more professional.
Exactly to that. I've even thought about. I don't think I would do it at this age, but I haven't thought about for years. Once I was in it, like going back and taking night classes or something, just to really get that, like, okay, what, how can I hone my skill? You know, just like,
yeah,
athlete, hire as a trainer or something, like as a designer, as a creative. But still, to the now this day, I kind of do that in a sense, because now we have the ability to have YouTube and all these different videos and tutorials and things you can do without necessarily having to go back to school.
Learn.
And maybe more specific, because you can kind of hone in on things you want to learn, you know, and really, you know, building websites. And over the time, these things become so much easier too. Because back in the day when it came to, hey, we want you to build a website for us, I'm like, oh God, like, okay, I can see again what it looks like. I can sketch up and show you some design, but actually going into the back end and writing HTML and getting this to become
right.
a thing that you can click on and use, absolutely not. So as always, well, do you have a guy that, so my strengths and people wanting to hire me came with, well, do you also have a guy that can build the website, which I didn't always have that. So over the years, it's been nice because the simplicity of being able to build websites and social media and everything that makes it so much easier now to be creative, even without a creative background. Then if you have a creative background, you understand Illustrator, you understand Photoshop, you can take what the average person can do and really take that up to the next level. Yeah.
I got two things for you. One, tell us about everything you have going on right now, because you have a lot of stuff going on now and coming up in the future. That's item number one.
Yes. Where do we start? So right now, again, I'm with the what's going on with Trust Me Vodka, and I've kind of taken a back seat to that. So the future of where that's at and what's happening, again, hoping for the best, but I'm not in control of that in any way today. Can't even really speak to what's going on with that. So I'd rather other people can ask questions about what's going on with that. So outside of that, I'm basically have had the chasingthecool.com, as you talked about. I've had that forever. Kind of towards like November of last year, I kind of started going in. I was working with my brother, who, again, with his following and background, he still has a lot of people that just, you know, kind of anything he does or wants to put out there, people are, you know, asking him for t-shirts and anything. So we started designing up some t-shirts and stuff that had some cool throwback, like super classic t-shirts and kind of stuff of like his first year factory racing for Honda. And like just doing some cool stuff. I told you guys a story before that the first shirt that we did with him, that was his first year factory Honda, was 1982. So we did a big 82 and just a picture of him, you know, with a like wing in the background. And we sold like 250 plus units in like 2 days. And we had no way, we were like, if we sell a dozen, like that'd be cool. It was just for
sure.
So I kind of connected that to the chasingthecool.com. He didn't have a platform or website to do any of this. So we were just working together just kind of as a fun little test. And so then it was like, okay, cool. Well, same thing as I did with the Trust Me Vodka and brands before, let's create that, that need for, let's limit it. You know, there's only going to be 200 shirts and let's, you know, next month we'll drop another one and it's going to be available for X days. And so we did that. We did like 4 or 5 of those and they sold out. We included a poster with Carlsbad Raceway, you know, the infamous raceway that was out here that's not here anymore. He had raced and won races there. So we did one of those showing like the old motocross sign off the 5 freeway and get a poster with the shirt. And so all that stuff was just fun stuff that, again, we like to think of all the things that we like that other companies do from all the sports of like, how can we do that with you? And so as I kept doing that, I started just like, hey, and I'd add in and chasing the cool design or just different things. So I started adding in different things and doing little collaborations with people. And so still doing that. So that's up there. And with the podcast, that's something we talked about. I mean, even right now I have one up there. I probably should have worn it today since the Masters is on, but I did a Chasing the Cool Masters shirt. Hopefully, I know they're busy right now. So I hopefully they're not watching this. So I don't get a cease and assist from Augusta for the Masters for using the little map on there, because that's be in big trouble. But I like to have fun with that stuff. You got to kind of push the envelope sometimes and kind of pull in things that people understand, put a little twist on it. So I'm always adding stuff almost weekly onto there. So you can see kind of different things like what I'm wearing here that are shirts and stuff. You can pick up on that. Working with Mended. So Malcolm McCassie, a lot of people, a lot of friends here on the live that are watching know Malcolm McCassie. Years ago, he started a brand called Ethica. And before and during the creation of Trust Me Vodka, I was actually working there with him as creative director and helping him build that brand up. And that's really where we got really deep into like the background of like soccer with Danny Alves, and really getting into, he's you know, good friends with Meek Mill, and we had Rick Ross and Kelly, and then getting into all the NFL guys and everybody across the board, because it was kind of, it was like an undergarment, like Under Armour type underwear, but it was really hip lifestyle cultural brand that had a bigger meaning to it. Justin Bieber was on the front of People magazine, where you could see the band, you know, sticking out of the top of the pants and stuff.
Nice.
So all those little things like really took that brand to the next level. So then it was just me about creating fun prints and telling stories. So it was that same thing. Every week we would, you know, ultimately like create one pair of underwear that I would build, do a whole photo shoot, tell a whole story, have some fun name, and I would drop it 9 o'clock on Friday and sell out in like an hour. You know, it would go crazy. So through that, you learn all these different things. So Mended now is the new brand that I came up with this name years ago. Malcolm and I are great friends, so we're always both creatives. His mind goes 1,000 times faster than mine, as far as just, I think he has like 700 like names trademarked, like ready to go. So it's like, we always joke about that, because I'm like, cool, let's just try and get one done.
Great.
And on what we do. So Mended is that. So Mended right now, he's put all his focus into that for the last couple of years. And on the side, and with what's going on with Trust Me Vodka, I've been able to spend a little bit more time helping him with that. We've got really cool motocross gear, but the style of the motocross gear and everything, and kind of what it mimics and copies a lot of the things that I talked about in my background, where it's
right,
that Nike vibe and a different, because a lot of these hip hop guys and stuff are wearing this stuff on stage. You know, they're wearing the jerseys, the pants, everything. So they're actually built in with like really cool pockets, and just the background of what you get, you can wear it with the newest, hottest sneakers. So it's all these things that really connect it and make it different than just a moto brand or an underwear brand. The name Mended, everything that it stands for. He's an amazing storyteller. So we do Zoom calls like this all the time, where it just really gets down to the big message that we came up with for Mended, because we came up with this really soft, like breathable material. So it's the most comfortable thing you're ever going to wear. I promise you that. If anybody that hasn't worn it, go on Mended.com and just get one pair of these so you can try it. But he was asking me about the material. I'm like, hey, what do you think? What's it remind you of? Like, what do we call this? And I'm like, well, it reminds me to breathe, because it's breathable material. But the message and Mended and everything we talk about, and we kind of get deep sometimes, and it's like, it reminds you to breathe, because mental health, like just all these different things. Mm-hmm. And it was perfect, because I've been going through this with what's going on with Trust Me Vodka, to where you get really, you know, like things get emotional and you're going through a lot of things, and there's just multiple struggles with, you know, everything that's going on in life. And we got kids, and there's just so many things going on, that it was like, man, breathe. It's a reminder to breathe. So he, again, like all I have to do is do that, and before the Zoom call's done, he's got trademarks, it's done, it's ready to go on the website, he's got it handled. So it's Mended, and it's a reminder to breathe. And he has the tagline, a grateful thread, which is really cool. So when you look into Mended, anybody look it up and you know, go on the Instagram and follow it, because he's always on there. He's got a, you know, kind of separate podcast that he does in the mornings that's super inspirational. So it's more than just the brand Mended. It's really about who he is, relationships, and that's a lot of the things that you're asking me about, how I got to all these different people and met so many different people. That's, if you look up Malcolm McCassey, you're going to see how diverse this guy is and how giving he is, and how much he'll sit there and do what we're doing right now, just on a phone call, one-on-one, all day long, with anybody and everybody, from a Meek Mill to some kid that he met walking outside of the grocery store that was just sitting there and looked upset. He'll sit there and talk to him for 2 hours and just try and uplift the kid and get him motivated and positive. And that's just
who he is.
That's what Mended as a whole represents. So to me, when you look at it, and if you're trying to compare it to Epic or anything like that, yeah, there's a background, and that's where we both come from, and that's his creation originally. But you got to look at the person and the message and all the people behind Mended is what really makes it, and why I think it's going to continue to succeed and blow up, and ultimately probably surpass Epic, I would think.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this, because of the shirt. The shirt is just screaming at me there.
Yes.
Goat debate.
There's no debate.
There's no,
LeBron versus Jordan, what are we debating?
So a couple things. Why do you think, because I have my own theories of this, and it's not even a theory, but it's, but why do you think Kobe isn't mentioned as much? And it sounds like, you know, Jordan is the GOAT, your GOAT. He's also my GOAT. But have you even entertained the thought of, you know, what would it take for LeBron to be, I don't consider him 1B, I consider him 2, but I understand the argument that he could be 1B. But where are you with that three-headed discussion?
We have this conversation all the time. I have a lot of friends that are Lakers fans, and I love it too, because I got one, I'm not going to mention the name, if he might be watching over here. I got one Lakers fan that is like from LA, so he's real, real LA. People like that, I excuse them to be Dodgers fans and things like that. But yeah, we even had the conversation in year one where as soon as they signed, it was like, we don't even want LeBron. Get the hell out of here. And then, oh, I'm sorry about that championship that he gave you. Yeah, and all of a sudden, like, oh, what?
In the bubble.
I love, hey, you said it, not me.
I said it, in the bubble.
I didn't put the asterisk there, you did. I didn't put an asterisk on the Dodgers championship either. Did I just do that? Sorry. Anyway, so Michael Jordan, Kobe, that right there, my simplest answer to that is the fact that Kobe is a carbon copy of Michael Jordan.
We've seen it before. That's it.
Takes nothing away from...
Right.
Yes, hey, if I can't wait to see a carbon copy of Tiger Woods. I don't think we ever will. Mm-hmm. If we do, you know what? Maybe we will. His name is Charlie. Hopefully we do see a carbon copy of Tiger Woods. But that's my answer to that. When it comes to LeBron, I think it's generational. So it's a very different time. And where I do give LeBron a lot of credit, much like Steph Curry, and we can go through all the different ones, is to me, I'm a guy that looks at not who's the Kevin Durant, I think, is a perfect example. When you look at top players, I'm more impacted by players that change the game. Like they completely change the way the game is played. Michael Jordan obviously did that. Again, I think that's why Kobe doesn't really fit into that conversation, because Kobe was just an extension of Michael Jordan, you know, and he nailed it. I mean, he copied him to a T, to the tongue, to the, you know, fadeaways, everything was perfect. But I don't think he necessarily changed the way that people played the game, because it was a similar extension of Michael Jordan was gone and now Kobe's here, because they literally overlapped, you know. But I think when you get into Steph Curry's and LeBron's, like the big man was eliminated. You know, you got this dude that could come in, and someone of his size and where he should be down low is like all of a sudden like, no, this is going to be the best point guard in the NBA, LeBron James. And watching on TV, it kind of, go see that guy in person and stand next to him and go, wait, this is the best point guard in the NBA. And then take a Steph Curry. I mean, what he did to change the game to where now kids and women watch March Madness. I mean, it's three points. Like it or not, how much has changed the game? The point is, someone of his size, the opposite, completely changed the game and how you have to guard people, the types of players that you're going to pick up in the draft, the whole thing. And LeBron did the same thing. So to me, if Michael Jordan wasn't there, then it's LeBron James, hands down, scoring titles, all these different things. Again, without getting too deep into this, we could do this forever. Let's be careful when we're talking about old school NFL and new school NFL, because they're two different sports now. They've completely changed. So the ability of how much it's changed, protection of offense and quarterbacks and what you can get away with on defense, et cetera, the NBA and those two overlap in similarities of where you got to be careful when you're putting people together. And it's not to disrespect LeBron or anything like that, but it's a different game that we're playing. And that's why we had the conversation on one of our first ever podcasts, was I would like this, all-star team, old school five guys, new school five guys. But here's the difference. You have to pick one half is going to be played old school rules and one half's going to be played new school rules.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And that's where the coin flip lands. Cause what I would say is I would hope that the old school guys win the coin flip and they say, we play our rules in the first half. Cause guess what? Steph Curry ain't going to be able to lift his arms up in the second half and make any of those three-pointers because they're going to beat his ass in the first half. And right there, that me answers all the questions.
Mitchell Bailey, M. Bailey the Cool. Check him out at chasingthecool.com, Chasing the Cool podcast. What else you got for us, Mitchell?
Right now that's it. I'm got a lot of things that I'm trying to work on as a creative and entrepreneur. And again, my focus for 10 years has been 100% on Trust Me Vodka. So, not the way that I wanted things to go with that, the way that they sit today necessarily, but, those things, we got to keep going as people. I got a family, I got tons of supportive friends and people that keep me inspired and keep me going. And then I'm thankful for that. But through that, just always around to things like these podcasts and doing this, the reason that I do these things, one is just to be able to kind of stay relevant, talk about what's going on, keep your mind going and stay excited about things. Cause as a creative, you need that it's massive. And, through the pandemic and everything, everything's so challenging for people that I think it's the same thing that just, if you're kind of in between work and don't know what you're doing or any of those things, like having the ability to just get out and talk to people and stay around creatives and talk about creatives and talk about business opportunities and all that just keeps you there to where as you, at any time, I know this through Trust Me Vodka, the networking over these last years that I've met so many people and opportunities. I would have never woken up that day and thought, I'm going to go have this opportunity and talk to this person today or have the ability to do X. And it's happened time and time again. So I'm hopeful that some good things can still happen with Trust Me, because this is all, we built it for one, but it turned into a group of shareholders that have become super close friends of mine. How I met you, how I met Wes. And it's, there's so many people out there that I want to see this succeed because of them more than me specifically. And that's why I'm still even talking about it and still have any, need to want this to succeed is for the shareholders. I want everything that was promised to them to still happen, even if I'm not the guy that control how that happens.
Sure. Well, we'll be monitoring the situation. Thanks for joining Hard Parking.
Yes. Thanks, man.
The Hard Parking Podcast, a little bit of cars and so much more, available anywhere you get your podcast or check it out at hardparkingpod.com. I want to thank Mitchell Bailey for taking time out of his day to join the podcast. He's got a lot of stuff on his mind. And the story that he was telling about Trust Me and all those tidbits. If you want the real granular details, and they're very, they're really good, you need to check it out on his Chasing the Cool podcast. That's chasingthecool.com. I don't know Mitchell personally. That's the longest conversation I've had with him, or I've listened to him talk about things. Again, he joined us on One Drink Wednesday, and I got to take him at face value. But there is a little, maybe legally, there's just certain things he can't say, which when I think about it, it would make sense. But I don't know. Where are you guys on that? Right? Because you guys know I have one auto movement, and it's just an LLC, and it started out with three of us. After the first year and a half, one of the guys left, was asked to leave, but also left. And then it took me 3 or 4 years for my other business partner and co-owner for him to finally say, you know what? You can just take it. Because he didn't want to let it go. And so my point in that is I didn't have the power to be like, hey, man, you're out. I needed his sign off. And so when it's just two of you, it's weird to just show up to the office and no longer have access to anything if it's truly a 1A and 1B situation. So there had to have been something else going on there. I think it's all going to come out in the wash in the end. And hopefully, Mitchell gets what's coming to him in a good way, because that's his baby. It sounds like that was straight up his baby. And maybe when he got involved, maybe he was a little younger. I'm like that as a creative. You want desperately to break through, and when you bring in somebody who is someone like Mark Simo, who is well known, I don't know how much he's trusted in the industry, but he's well known, and he could take you to the next level because of what he did with No Fear in Life's a Beach. It's like, all right, I'll do the artwork, you handle the business, and let's do this. And I think in the end, it's really what screwed Mitchell over, you know, not only financially, but in the eye of public perception. Because there's a lot of people out there, in the court of public opinion, there are people out there on these boards that don't believe anything he's saying. But to me, what he's saying makes perfect sense. So if you want to hear more of that, check him out. I'm Mitchell Bailey, chasingthecool.com. Awesome guy. Hopefully one day I get to meet him in person. Want to thank Wright Honda and Wright Toyota. Sell Shop Wireless Services, 4wheelonline.com, AutoCannon, officially licensed Honda and Acura gear. Speaking of AutoCannon, I'm going to link up with them this weekend at Long Beach Grand Prix. Get some more official cool gear, so you'll be seeing me sporting that. Patreon business supporter, Automotive Specialty Tool out of Owings Mills, Maryland. Cuy Automotive out of Warren Garden, Florida. Pell Construction out of Conway, Michigan. Beak House Small Home Design out of Ashburn, Virginia and Traverse City, Michigan. Of course, Shaping Success of West Hanksley out of Boise, Idaho. Follow us on Instagram at One Drink Wednesday. Follow us on TikTok. You know I'm on TikTok now. One Drink Wednesday. Follow me at Hard Parking J. I think I'm Hard Parking J. Email the show, hardparkingpodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Mark Stoneman, Catherine Cox, Eddie Ramos, Richard Graves, Byron Jones, Bo Jung, Alice Kamina, Drew Bunkley, Yasu Chiba. Speaking of Eddie Ramos, congratulations. I went to his wedding this weekend. It was a beautiful wedding. Beautiful everything. Love you, dude. Follow me on Instagram at Jay Finning. Join the Hard Parking Violations Facebook group. Post whatever you want. I may or may not approve it. I can't grow that you tell the world how great the show is. I can't grow that you tell the world how great this show is. Let's do this. Let's grow this thing together, and I'll talk to you all next week.
Now it's stripping time.
Shut up!